God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Thank you, Brother Hutchings. Today, Brother Hutchings and Bill Federer conclude a three-day series based upon Brother Bill's book and DVD entitled Change to Chains. Bill speaks every year in churches and other venues on a variety of subjects, including speaking tomorrow at our Detroit conference. He's an author and a historian. Brother Hutchings, tell us something about the book and DVD set.
Thank you, Brother Jerry. This is a tremendous history lesson. You know, the saying is that history always repeats itself, and the only thing that history proves is that man never learned anything from history. But we are really pleased and honored to present this series on our program because I think it's a tremendous lesson. Also, it corresponds with what the Bible has to say about the human government that we all serve under, and it was ordained by God that in order to give man the freedom to exercise his own free will and to enjoy the fruits of his labor without someone else taking it from him without cause. But usually there is a dictator who rises to the top who takes everything away. But I hope you're enjoying this series by Dr. Federer. Certainly we would encourage you to get a copy of the book and also the three DVD set. The DVD set is especially good for school children. They learn a tremendous lesson from this series on DVD. Brother Bill, it's good to have you again on the program today. And you're going to tell us something about, I believe, another power that has risen up in the world that corresponds to the course of history, that is Islam.
Well, you're right, Noah. You know, when Alexander the Great conquered, he had the largest empire that had ever existed in the world. But he didn't make the people give up their religions. He just wanted land. Matter of fact, he actually adopted some of the Persian beliefs. When the Romans conquered, and they had the largest empire in the world, they didn't make the people give up their religions. They took that country's God and stuck it in their pantheon in Rome. Of course, the Jews and the Christians got upset when they, you know, wanted to try to put the statue of Jesus in there, and they said, no way. But the Romans weren't into making people give up their beliefs. But we see Islam comes along, and it is a whole new dimension. Muhammad was not only a military leader, he fought in 66 battles and raids. Muhammad was a political leader. And then Muhammad was a religious leader. So I talked to Dr. Alan Keyes, and he said that he's finally come to the conclusion that Islam is the perfect totalitarian religion. It's sort of like communism with a god. And it's actually a little bit worse than communism. Communists are atheists, and they think, oh, well, this life is all there is, and I don't mind dying, but, you know, I might as well enjoy myself. Well, in Islam, they promise a paradise of sexual pleasures to men, and so they're actually anxious to die for Islam. But Muhammad dies in 632 A.D., and within 100 years of his death, Muslim warriors conquer all of Egypt, which had been Coptic Christian since the apostle or the evangelist Mark that wrote the gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And then the Muslims conquered North Africa. There used to be 250 Catholic dioceses along North Africa in the 7th century, and they're all wiped out by the Muslims. Then the Muslims invaded Spain, Visigothic Spain, and in 10 years conquered all of Spain. They crossed the Pyrenees Mountains, conquered southern France. They were finally stopped just outside of Paris by Charles Martel, the grandfather of Charlemagne. Then Muslims conquered Jerusalem, which had been a Christian city since Constantine's time. Then Muslims conquered Syria. Syria was the first country to completely be Christian. It was evangelized by the Apostle Paul in Damascus, Syria. In Antioch, Syria was the first city that Christians were called Christians. And the Syrian Christians, called Nestorian Christians, they had churches and thriving communities in Iran, Iraq, Persia, Babylon. They had thriving Christian communities in India, in Mongolia, And then China, the Tang Dynasty in the 600s in China, had a thriving Christian community. There's this steel, this stone with Chinese characters and Syrian language dated from the 600s, and gravestones they found dated from the 600s, a thriving Christian community in China. And then in Korea and the Philippines, these Nestorian Christians. Even Kublai Khan's mom was a Nestorian Christian. And so it was the Muslim leader Tamerlane that killed 17 million people and basically wiped out the Christian church across Central Asia. And now there's just a fraction of a fraction of Christians left there. But then the Muslims invaded what is today Turkey, but back then it was the Byzantine Christian Empire. And so this was the largest empire in the world. The Umayyad Muslim Empire went from the Persian Gulf to the Atlantic Ocean. And it was all a political military machine, but it added a religious dimension in that it was controlling your very beliefs. And so Islam is the ultimate of concentrated power, and it is the antithesis of Christianity, which is separated power, and that the people are individually accountable to God so they can get by without a big government. And but in my book, Change to Chains, I go through this progress of history, and the typical form of government is a monarchy. And whether it's a Mongolian Genghis Khan or a Ming Dynasty Chinese emperor or an Incan emperor in South America or the King Charles V of Spain, the sun never set on the Spanish Empire. The Spaniards had South America, and they had everything, west of the Appalachians. They had Spain, they had the Philippines. And then you had the British Empire. The British Empire was the largest empire the world had ever seen. 13 million square miles, a half a billion people. They controlled India and Hong Kong and America. And for a while, you know, they had Canada and British Guyana, and they had the Sandwich Islands in the Atlantic, and all controlled basically by one person, the King of England. There was the French Sun King, Louis XIV. He had a huge empire. These were all controlled by one person. Catherine the Great of Russia, 12 time zones that even included Alaska, all controlled by one person. Austro-Hungarian Empire, the Imperial Japan. And so we see that desire to accumulate, it goes back to the fall in the Garden of Eden, and every human being is born with his selfish nature, where a baby wants to take a rattle from another baby, and some kid on a playground wants to be the ball hog, you know, and one king wants to take a kingdom from another king. But as time goes on and technology advances, the kingdoms get bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, it's still going on today. We have China that has larger ambitions than just their own territory. We have Islam, where the Muslim Brotherhood says they want to have a one-world government controlled by a Muslim caliph. And then you have these global international financial people, the George Soros and David Rockefeller type people, that they want to have a global financial kingdom. But this power concentrates. And again, we see how unique America is, that when America was formed, we separated the power. Ben Franklin, at the Constitutional Convention, 1787, he said, "We have gone back to ancient history for models of government," which we have just done in these programs, "and have examined the different forms of those republics which, having been formed with the seeds of their own disillusion, now no longer exist." And we talked about the Book of Judges, Athens, the Roman Republic, the Italian city-states, Novgorod in Russia, the Swiss cantons and the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, the Dutch Republic and the English Puritan Commonwealth. And then Franklin goes on to say, "We have viewed modern states around Europe, but find none of their constitutions suitable to our circumstances." And then Franklin says, "We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings, that except the Lord build a house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this. I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel." Here he makes reference to the very first civilization in the Mesopotamian Valley, and here we're at the total other end of the spectrum of people having power. And so when power is concentrated, the state is supreme and the king or the dictator is the head of the state. When power is separated, the individual is supreme. America's founders wanted to maximize the individual. But if every individual is supreme and a king unto themselves, there would be anarchy, unless they all had Judeo-Christian morals. That's why John Adams said in 1798, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." Ben Franklin said, "Only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become corrupt, they have more need of masters." We can begin to see Plato's saying, where in Athens he said, "Democracy without virtue inevitably ends in chaos, out of which a dictator arises." Sam Adams said this, "While the people are virtuous, they cannot be subdued. But when they lose their virtue, they will be ready to surrender their liberties to the first external or internal invader." And Washington, in his farewell address, said, "All the dispositions that lead to political prosperity, religion, and morality are indispensable supports." So there's what I call a scale of virtue, that for people to rule themselves without a king, the people have to have a whole lot of self-control and virtue, doing to others as you would have them doing to you. There's a God looking over our shoulder that wants us to be nice to everybody. As long as everybody has those, then there's not going to be any crime, and you can get by without a strong government. But as power concentrates, people, they lose their virtue. There's crime. People say, "Government, restore order." The government takes more of your freedoms, and every new law they pass is a bar that comes down on your cage, taking away some of your freedom. I tell students, you know, like a parent giving kids the car keys, and they say, "Look, you can drive around and come home whenever you want because I know you're going to do what's right. But if you don't do what's right and hang around the wrong kids and drink and drive and drugs, and you'll get picked up by the police and put in jail, and you'll be controlled from the outside." So you're going to be controlled one way or the other, either voluntarily, morally, from the inside, or forcibly from the outside. That's the same way as a country. We're either going to be voluntarily controlled with internal morals, with a Judeo-Christian population, or we're going to be forcibly controlled by a dictator. And so as we move in this dictator direction, Lord Acton in England said, "Absolute power corrupts." It says power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So as power is concentrated, that person that is in control has to be willing not to have any virtue in order to stay in power. He has to be willing to do whatever it is politically expedient. You know, kill and backstab and lie and give a speech on television in front of the whole country and just flat out lie. And, you know, Machiavelli said, "A promise made was a necessity of the past. A promise broken is a necessity of the present. A prince never lacks justification to break his word." And then Muhammad said, "It's okay to lie to advance Islam." Lenin said, "Promises are like pie crust meant to be broken." And we see that these totalitarian rulers throughout history, they said, hey, the ruler has to not have virtue in order to stay in power. So as the more power gets concentrated, the more you can be guaranteed that the people in control do not have virtue. And so we have a question before us. We see that something unique happened in America, and it's because these people had this Judeo-Christian, godly, biblical morals. Let's look at the Soviet Union. It fell apart in 1991, and we helped them set up democracies in the former Soviet republics. And 20 years have gone by. Who now controls these former Soviet republics? The mafia, the black market, the organized crime. 50% of Russia's GDP is the black market. It's a thuggery. It's gangs. And if you're a member of that gang, you're more equal. If you're not a member, you're less equal. If you're an enemy, you're dead. It's that patronage system. Why didn't these former Soviet states experience the same freedoms that America did? They had 70 years of atheism underlying their experiment of the people ruling themselves. Well, then let's look at the Middle East. These dictators get overthrown. Our president makes a phone call to the leader of Egypt, Mubarak, and says, "Step down, and we're going to have democracy over there." And whenever you introduce democracy into a Muslim country, it winds up with Sharia law run by the Muslim Brotherhood fundamentalists, and Christians and Jews and non-Muslims and women are made second-class citizens. Why don't those people experience the same burst of freedom and opportunity and prosperity that America did? They have Islam underlying their experiment of the people ruling themselves. In America, we had these Judeo-Christian values. In other words, there is no concept of equality in Islam. Allah loves the Muslim who has submitted, and Allah hates the infidel who refuses to submit. You know, it takes two women to testify in court against one man. A man can have four wives, a woman cannot have four husbands. So there's no concept of equality in Islam. Equality came about in America because it's based on Genesis. And so when the Declaration says all men are endowed by a creator with certain innate rights, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, that creator in Genesis created everybody equal. And here's an interesting quote from Robert Winthrop in 1849. He said, men must be controlled either by a power within them or a power without them, either by the word of God or the strong arm of man, either by the Bible or the bayonet. So Robert Winthrop, the Speaker of the House in 1849, says you're either going to be controlled from the inside or the outside. And then you see our founders. John Adams wrote the Constitution for Massachusetts. And in there, he had the state paying for Protestant teachers of piety and religion. Why? Because he said, if we're not going to have a king, the people have to have more morals. And so we see that our government was unique. You know, when the Constitution was being written, Thomas Jefferson was in France as an ambassador. He comes back to America, and he's having tea with General George Washington at Mount Vernon. And Jefferson asks Washington, why is there a bicameral legislature? Why is there a House and a Senate? He says, it's going to take forever to get anything passed. And Washington said, you yourself have just proved the excellence of two houses this very moment. And Jefferson said, how is that, General? Washington said, you have poured your hot tea from the cup into the saucer to get it cool and poured it back again before you drank it. He says, in the same way, we have two houses of Congress, a House and a Senate. In other words, our government was set up so that nothing would be pushed through in the fury and passion of a moment, that there would be no crises. So we've got to hurry up and pass this 2,000-page bill that nobody has time to read, but somebody had time to write, you know, and it just happened to be sitting in somebody's drawer. When the dust settles, you see you just surrendered a whole lot of your freedoms to the central government. And so Washington is saying, look, our government was designed to change slowly on purpose. Frustratingly slow at some times, but thank God it's slow to making bad changes. So our founders hated change. They said change was bad. And so they designed a system of government that was very difficult to change. And so we see there's two types of power in the world, concentrated power and separated power. Again, if you were to hold up a fist in one hand and say concentrated power and an open palm with your fingers apart on the other hand and say separated power, and then go back to the fist. And so we've gone from concentrated power to separated power back to concentrated. Now, I've talked quite a bit about the philosophers that wanted to separate power, but we've seen something happen. In times of crises, power reconcentrates back into the hands of the government, ultimately one person. Washington warned of this in his farewell address. He said, usurpation, though in one instance may be the instrument of good, it is the customary weapon by which free governments are destroyed. Usurpation. What's usurpation? Usurpation is you do something you're not supposed to, and you get away with it long enough that everybody thinks that's the new rules, right? And so the president doesn't have power for, you know, 40 czars, but he does it anyway, and then everybody gets used to it. And then the president, you know, shoots missiles into Libya and says, okay, I'm going to do this without the Congress approving this war. And he gets away with it. And then the president, they deem something passed instead of having enough votes for it, you know. And it's this stuff where you're doing stuff you're not supposed to, and people let you get away with it. And it's always for a good end, at least in your mind. Like, this is going to take care of health care or whatever. So usurpation, though in one instance may be the instrument of good, it is the customary weapon by which free governments are destroyed. So let's look at it. What happened? In other words, it's great that Lincoln ended this slavery during the Civil War. But in the process, a lot of power was usurped by the federal government away from the states. It was great that Woodrow Wilson got us through World War I. But in the process, a lot of power was usurped by the federal government with the creation of the Federal Reserve, the federal income tax, the 17th Amendment. It was great that FDR got us through the Depression and World War II. But in the process, the federal government usurped a whole lot of powers with the New Deal programs and expansion of income tax. And Lyndon Johnson, he was convinced that his New Deal welfare state was a good thing. But in the process, a whole lot of power went from the states to the federal government. Even President Bush, it was a good thing that he stopped more attacks of terror. But in the process, we passed a lot of Patriot Act and airport TSA, and the government can read your emails and track your credit card purchases and you know, track everything you buy with your credit cards. And so it's a good short-term goal of freeing slaves and of stopping terrorist attacks, but you can't help but see the trend. We're going to from separated power to concentrated power, and then all that concentrated power has been given to President Obama. And we see the crisis, the Gulf oil spill, the immigration crisis, debt crisis, unemployment crisis, gas crisis, healthcare crisis. And the answer is always what? Give the government more control, and they'll take care of everything. There's a cyber attack on the Internet. Well, give the government control over the Internet. Well, there's a bank problem. Well, give the government control of the banks. And so even though it's sold to the populace as being an instrument of good, in the long term, we see that power is going from the people to the government. Again, Ronald Reagan said, the government that's big enough to give you everything you want is big enough to take away everything you have. But there's also another disturbing trend, and these are philosophers of concentrated power. You think philosophers of concentrated power? Yeah, our founders wanted to take the power of a king and separate it, but there's a bunch of other philosophers that wanted to take separated power and concentrate it.
Thank you, Dr. Fetter, for being with us for this series. Here now is our announcer, Brother Jerry Gilner, to tell you how you can get a copy of this valuable book, also the tremendous 3DVD set based on the book. I've seen the DVDs. It's a tremendous presentation. And don't forget that Dr. Fetter will be with us September the 10th. We'll be at the Embassy Suites in Southfield area in Detroit.
And friends, it's not too late to pre-register for that conference. By doing that, you won't have to pay the registration fee at the door. Phone 1-800-652-1144 for complete details and to pre-register. That's tomorrow. While you're at it, be sure to get a copy of the book and the 3DVD set, Change to Chains. The book is available for a gift of $20 in the U.S., $22 in Canada. The DVDs are offered for a contribution of $20 in the U.S., $21 in Canada. But when you ask for both at the same time, the gift amount is $35 in the United States, $38 for our friends in Canada. Why not pick up the phone right now and dial 1-800-652-1144 or send a check or money order by mail to get these materials. The address is Southwest Radio Ministries, Post Office Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma 73008. Third way to get Brother Bill's book and DVD set is the Internet. Our website address is swrc.com. Brother Bill's done a masterful job in presenting the history of man's efforts to gain control over others, beginning with Nimrod and coming right up to today. It's a tremendous adventure in history. The three programs in this series are also available on CD or tape for an offering of $17 in the U.S., $18 in Canada. To get any or all these items, call 1-800-652-1144. The website is at swrc.com. Be sure to register for the Detroit conference, which is tomorrow. Next over many of these stations is a Bible in the News report on your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. Welcome to today's Bible in the News report, as we consider a recent story from a biblical viewpoint. It's a feature of your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. Reporting today is Southwest Radio board member Jerry Tyson.
Sometimes we get our warnings from unexpected sources. When a self-avowed Muslim Marxist says the White House is tied to the Muslim Brotherhood, maybe we should pay attention. From the website thenewamerican.com on August 18, 2011, we read, Tariq Fatah, a self-described devout Muslim Marxist, has issued a strong warning that there is a Muslim Brotherhood influence at the White House. Fatah, a Canadian, delivered his caution back in June, asserting, the religion of Islam is being used as a tool by a fascist force. He then moved on to discuss what he views as the influence of Muslim Brotherhood at the highest level of the federal government. Quoting, instead of bringing victory over the fascist forces of the Muslim Brotherhood, we now recognize that their infiltration is right up to the American White House. According to Cal Thomas of the Washington Examiner, Fatah may be onto something, as it has been a long-time goal of the Muslim Brotherhood to infiltrate the leadership ranks of the United States. Thomas wrote, in 1991, a memo written by Mohammed Akram for the Shura Council of the Muslim Brotherhood spelled out the objective of the organization. Akram said the Muslim Brotherhood must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers so that it is eliminated and God's religion, that is Islam in their thinking, is made victorious over all other religions. Fatah also bemoans what he perceives to be an inability to stand up to radicalization as a result of political correctness. He said, today we are fighting another idea of Islamofascism that has shut our mouths and we can't speak because we're too scared that someone may turn around and call us a racist, that the unwillingness to confront radicals could lead to the end of civilization as we know it. End of article. Much speculation has been made about why America seems to be absent among the biblical prophecies dealing with the end times. This article may have the answer, at least in part. Surely America cannot continue as we have in recent years, sticking our finger, as it were, in God's eye. We don't know if we may be neutralized by political means, nuked to vapor, or whimper away into oblivion. Our end cannot be too far in the future, though, if something doesn't happen quickly. Spiritual revival and a return to God's Word is our answer. It seems America fits the description of Revelation 18, where political Babylon is destroyed. Christian America, used of God in the past to send missionaries and to broadcast the gospel around the world, has descended to the level that nationally, we are now barely able to comprehend biblical truth at the most basic level. Perhaps the civilized world will come to an end.
That's today's Bible in the News report of Southwest Radio Ministries. To get a complimentary copy of the monthly publication, call 1-800-652-1144. The website is swrc.com. Be here for our next Your Watchman on the Wall program and a Bible in the News report.